Welcome to the Purple Stuff Podcast.
It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Starring Jay from Sludge Central and Matt from Dinosaur Dracula.
So, Jay, before we get into tonight's show, I think we need to set a ground rule.
Okay, what's that?
We're just going to call him Frankenstein, right? Like, we're not going Frankenstein's monster all night long.
So, what you meant to say is, tonight on the Purple Stuff Podcast, we're going to be talking about Frankenstein.
I thought it was implied by the question.
I like that. Keeping them on their toes. No, I know what you're saying, and I would opt to keep it at Frankenstein because it's more concise.
I completely agree. I was really getting worried as you were winding up that answer there that you were going to go the other way. So yes, the Frankenstein show, Jay. Can you believe it? A long time in the making here.
Something that we've always wanted to do, staring us in the face, appropriate of nothing, right?
Well, it's April. It's a big month for Frankenstein, apparently.
Although, Frankenstein's monster would be 206 years old.
You know, I never considered it, but I would have thought he was older, but you're right. He's not that old.
Well, I mean, the book came out that long ago.
Our grandmother's grandmother's new Frank is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about all kinds of Frankensteins that stuck out to us.
From all walks of pop culture, there are a few that we've already talked about on the show, so that's why we're not bringing up some obvious ones tonight.
Exactly, yeah. We try not to repeat, and there's a whole slew of great stuff tonight.
So who's going to kick things off?
I think you should kick things off tonight.
All right. Here we go with the first Frankenstein.
Number one.
I heard him yelling in the castle.
Fix me!
His name's Big Frank!
Fix me!
I said, I'm going to fix you! No talking monster, Big Frank!
I'll fix you, Big Frank! Monster boy fixed!
Good.
How do you feel now, Frank?
I'm alive!
It's always fun to fix him! No talking monster, Big Frank!
Thank you.
Big Frank talks and his eyes light up. Batteries not included.
My first pick is PlaySchool's Big Frank, which is kind of this like combination of an action figure and a board game.
Yeah, I love that you picked this.
Yeah, it's from 1992. Now, Jay, I know I've written about Big Frank. I have posted about Big Frank on social media. We didn't talk about this guy on the show, right?
In personal life, probably, but not on the show.
No, I can actually remember like three distinct conversations with you about PlaySchool's Big Frank. If you've never seen him, he's like this cute, friendly, green-skinned Frankenstein figure. Bright orange clothes, Jay, which were awesome. And he's about the size of the old Inhumanoids figures.
I'd really like that you mentioned the suit, because the orange suit, I love when you go in different directions with what he's wearing, and this was fun.
If this figure, if Big Frank was wearing like a brown suit, say, nobody would ever talk about him. It's all about that suit.
It is.
So you get this action figure and it's huge and articulated and that would be enough. But Big Frank had some tricks up his sleeve, Jay.
Well, not up his sleeve.
No, actually, you're right. Literally in his head. You lift up the top of his head to pull out these plastic tools. And then you like pop open his chest and it's all full of gears and stuff.
Gears and cogs and wheels.
Remember, this is PlaySchool. So it's a really like aged down kind of like tool use toy. So no matter what you do to Frank, you're fixing him, and it'll make him talk, and his eyes will blink.
Fix me.
Fix me.
Fix me.
His name's Big Frank.
Fix me.
I said, I'm going to...
You're leading into the next point, which is the TV commercial, which is probably more famous than the toy.
Yeah, it really is. Live action Big Frank.
Live action giant Big Frank wandering around screaming for kids to fix him. That commercial was on constantly.
It was so cool, though, and it made me want to be younger when it was out.
You're right. I don't want to admit it, but we were both a little long in the tooth for Play School's Big Frank in 1992.
Yeah, because I wanted this damn thing.
I'm alive!
For people our age, it's more of like one of those things you see and you know you can't get, so you let it go, but you pick it back up when you're old and you just don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
And I have one for that exact reason.
And it's like that soft plastic, right? Like the feel of it.
It's really not that soft, as I recall, but it definitely looks like that soft vinyl.
Yeah. It just has that kind of look to it, which I think is cool because obviously other things have come along that copied that style.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I would compare Big Frank, you want to compare it to a modern line, it's like an Imagine X figure, but gigantic.
Right. You mentioned Imagine X. Like, the issue I had with it is that he did look too innocent and nice. I would have really went for it if he looked creepy.
You think Play School should have tried to take a stab at the gore horror market?
You gotta scare him once in a while.
Definitely would have been a twist in business perspective for our pals at Play School.
I just love that you could store tools in the guy's head. Like, way to use your head.
Got a spare key and you don't know where to put it? Big Frank's head.
These are not that expensive on eBay, like $30 to $50. So if somebody does want a secret hiding spot that no one's going to check, unless they listen to the Purple Stuff podcast.
Oh, man. Now, anyone who listens to the show, if they turn into a robber, if they see Big Frank, they're going to go right for the head.
Is it just me, or did this thing have four fingers on each hand?
Let me see if I do have a picture of him in my notes here.
Well, I thought you had the thing. You should have had it at the ready.
I didn't. I mean, it's an audio podcast. I didn't think I needed a visual prop, you know?
It's like Carrot Top on this show. You said to be Zagnuts.
Here, hey, look. Here, there he is. You hear him? That's Big Frank. He's right next to me. He does, in fact, have four fingers in each hand.
I just thought that was weird because if he was cobbled together from parts from the dead, then he would have normal hands.
So I'm a little confused by Big Frank because the Universal Monsters renaissance of the 90s happened later. So what was the genesis of choosing
surge of Frankenstein?
Right. Was it sort of like a mutant piggyback over the Dracula thing? Bram Stoker's Dracula?
That could be it. Yeah, there was no tie-in, just a random Frankenstein, which is what made it cool.
If you look at toys from 1992, this might be the coolest one.
Big Frank. Big ups to Big Frank.
Number two.
I'll never forget the day Frankenstein turned up on my doorstep. And Ravi said it was an anniversary present because we'd known each other for 27 days. There hadn't been any nights. And we watched the sun going down with a Diet Coke. He said, now we're a family. We should get married. The Passion Springs Motel had one room left, with one double bed and one single.
That was a Diet Coke commercial from 1994. And it's kind of strange. It has a blow-up doll of Frankenstein. Do you remember this commercial?
Well, I mean, just for the record, calling it a blow-up doll of Frankenstein implies it's an inflatable Frankenstein. Totally innocent. I have big feelings about this one.
All right, but do you remember when it aired? Because I do, and it was kind of baffling at the time.
It was baffling in a way that kind of fit that era.
Yeah, like everything was really quirky and like liquid television.
Right. It almost was intentionally nonsensical.
I think it's more out of place now. It's like this old vintagey vibe, but early 90s. And there's a guy and a girl that are in love. But everywhere they go, they got this inflatable Frankenstein with them, and he's going on their anniversary with them, staying in a hotel room with them.
I just have to point out that they go on a anniversary for their 27th day together. It's a very quirky commercial day.
It is.
These two young lovers are out of control.
It was so strange when they got to the point that they said, we have to get another bed for Frankenstein. Up until that moment, you're along for the ride, and then they go there.
It's an interesting implication that the commercial is making. This commercial, by the way, that is for diet soda. I noticed something when I was looking through the YouTube comments on this. There's a comparison that I completely agree with. Someone said that it's basically like a Mazzy Star song. I think they just found a sound alike.
Right, it's a sound alike.
But I did look up the Mazzy Star Fade Into You video, and it's like exactly the same.
Oh, so they ripped it off.
It's definitely, to me, seems like it's inspired by that. Like, if you look up that video, it's the same kind of Super 8 home video footage.
Right, yes. That's the inspiration.
I knew the song was big. I didn't realize it was that big.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I just thought it was weird that this happened. And there was also other commercials in that era that were very, we'll say, saucy for the time.
Diet Coke was edgy.
Yeah, that year.
Wow.
They were thirsty Diet Coke commercials.
But you remember what it was like. You remember what it was like back then. That was the thing. Everyone was trying to push the envelope and do all these like wackadoo things.
Exactly. Like go on your honeymoon with an inflatable Frankenstein. Very strange.
But also really enviable.
Very offbeat commercial. And I think it needed to be talked about because it doesn't get a lot of action.
I spent a fair portion of today trying to match the giant inflatable Frankenstein from this commercial with a real one.
Mm-hmm.
But nope, it does look like it was a custom job.
Oh, man.
Can't buy one.
Maybe we can get a replica. Now we have a mission in life.
Finally.
Number three.
In the ocean's unfathomable depths, a gigantic, man-like creature appears. From the fiery depths of the earth comes a prehistoric mastodon of destruction. Before has the screen known such heart-stopping terror. Frankenstein, with the strength of 1,000 men and every man's need for affection that makes him a willing captive.
The chain hurts you.
Jay, it is now time for the show's one and only Frankenstein Kaiju.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
Kaiju, that's how you say it, right?
Yeah.
Good. 1965, Frankenstein conquers the world, aka Frankenstein vs. Baragon.
Yes.
This is a Toho film in the style and vein of an old Godzilla flick, but with Frankenstein instead, which is amazing.
It's so amazing that it was my pick and you stole it.
All right, number one. You potential list that you sent me was like 30 Frankensteins long. I'm supposed to pick from the next best 30? You're literally claiming the top 30 Frankensteins. That's ridiculous. And even in that, all you put down was Frankenstein big movies.
No, I didn't say that. I said Toho. Big movies.
Anyway, I didn't see this one before I picked it. I just thought it would be fun to talk about a Frankenstein kaiju. But man, I actually really enjoyed it.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, it's obviously kind of goofy, but you get wrapped up in it. And it was better than I expected.
In most of these old monster movies, you get the 80 minutes of just nothing and the 10 good minutes. But here, you're with Frankenstein in one form or another the whole way through. So it's awesome.
I mean, you do get that surge of action toward the last 10 minutes of the movie, of course.
Oh, surge of action. Frankenstein pun.
Let me ask you this, though, because I had never seen this either. Frankenstein reminds me of Chaka from Land of the Lost meets Jaws from James Bond.
All right, now I have to look up both these characters. Chaka from Land of the Lost. Yes, obviously. And who was the other one?
Jaws from James Bond. If you merge them together.
Shit. I mean, you couldn't be more right. You couldn't be. That's literally the design of this Frankenstein. Unbelievable. So, Jay, hold on. The kids are hollering outside. I don't know who they are, but maybe they overheard that whole exchange and they're just as impressed as I was.
No, they're just super fans of Frankenstein versus Baragon.
And who wouldn't be? Let's talk about what happens in this movie. I will try to summarize it in just a few sentences. You have the still beating heart of Frankenstein's monster. It ends up in Japan and regenerates into this, like, boy Frankenstein.
It's all right. Don't run. Everything will be all right. Trust us. Child, listen. Listen. I promise you won't be hurt.
He's kind of going through puberty. He's a little goofy.
A little bit of that, but because the kid grew up soaking up radiation from the Hiroshima bombing, he won't stop growing. He goes full Godzilla-sized.
Oh, there's something in the water. Straight ahead. Reverse engines!
Reverse engines!
Oh, Frankenstein!
It's amazing because you never thought that you would see Frankenstein get that big.
Right? You stole that line from Joel Siegel. I remember that from his review.
Joel Siegel.
That was his closer. By the way, his clothes grow as he does.
Yes.
Did you notice that?
It's not like Ferrigno's Incredible Hulk where his clothes fall off.
Through the movie, they'll try to make it appear like his buttons are a little tighter. But I'm like, dude, he went from being a child-sized Frankenstein. Now he's like Godzilla. Like, yes. The shirt wouldn't fit no matter what you did to it.
Stop it! Get back! Stop shooting him!
But he was also a good kaiju.
So then he fights Baragon.
Baragon is, to be fair, he is hinted at somewhere in the beginning of the movie. But for the most part, it's like out of nowhere, there's two giant monsters in the movie.
Here's the thing. The struggle between Frankenstein and Baragon, which is basically like a dinosaur.
Sort of like an armadillo dinosaur.
Right, but he doesn't really put up much of an offense. He's kind of just defending himself the whole time. And it's such a weird struggle. He's just in his habitat, and people are messing with him. Like, if you watch that in a different way, I think you'll get a different perspective. You know, I'm telling you,
there's a scene where he eats a horse. He eats a horse. He's not good.
I don't even remember that scene.
You blocked it out.
He's your average, rambunctious, floppy-eared little Baragon. I love him.
He's not bad.
Oh, there is actually, and I want to see if you notice this, when Frankenstein and Baragon are fighting, there is a belly-to-belly suplex.
You know, it did look very WWE at large. There was a nice choreography to this match between Frankenstein and Baragon. Held up really nicely for me. And in the end, spoilers, Frankenstein dies after slaying Baragon. And these human scientists who throughout the film are like expressing some level of care and concern for this character are basically like, well, it's probably for the best.
But what was important though is he got his shit in. He got some airplane spins.
Jim Ross always said, Jay, you got to maximize your minutes.
Well, he definitely did.
Are you ready to have your mind blown?
Yes.
So there are apparently like 65 versions of this movie. And one of the ones that actually slipped out into the public, and you can look this up on YouTube, it's a version of the film where after fighting and killing Baragon, Frankenstein gets into another battle with a giant octopus.
Octopus, I read that.
Oh my God, please look it up right now. You have to see this.
Oh, they have it?
Yes, just look up Frankenstein giant octopus. It'll be the first match.
Okay. Frankenstein giant octopus. Well, this is up my alley because I'm a big fan of octopi.
I know, you've been pitching an octopi show.
All right, Frankenstein versus giant octopus. Oh my God.
So one thing you'll notice straight away is that this octopus is not water-based.
He's a land octopus. But like, look, Frankenstein's just messing with him. He's being a bully. I don't like Frankenstein in these movies. He's the villain.
He is not the villain. I will at least concede that this extra scene of him slaying a giant octopus or whatever's going on there, it was a bit much, which is probably why it's not officially in the cut.
Yeah, he was being abusive to animals, and I don't like that.
Apparently, they put that scene in because of the octopus scene in the original King Kong. At least that's what Wikipedia said, Jay.
I read that as well. Yeah. And I think they're like, you know, I worked in King Kong and the Goonies.
Frankenstein Conquers the World stars Nick Adams as the American scientist versus Frankenstein incarnate with the strength of 1,000 men, a phenomenon such as never seen before. See Frankenstein Conquers the World, astounding on the giant screen.
Number 4.
Every little girl loves little trolls, but what do guys wish for?
Battle trolls are out of control!
Battle trolls! Big-haired dudes with bad attitudes! Born to battle! Even other battle trolls! Troll Call! Trollminator! Controlula! Nunchuck Troll! Bullseye Troll and the Trollnet Launcher! Sven Troll and his Trollosaurus!
Battle trolls are out of control!
And troll sets each sold separately.
My next Frankenstein, Matt, is the Battle Trolls Frankentroll. And if I ever brought that up to anybody in my entire life, it would obviously be you, because you'd be the only person to have anything to offer me in return in this conversation.
Jay, if anything, I have too much.
So I don't think we ever specifically brought up battle trolls. Obviously, I know you've brought up trolls plenty of times.
You're right, we have not, but you have tried to bring him up like 5 or 6 times. It just never officially happened.
Yeah.
So this is a big moment for you, I think.
It's a momentous occasion. So these are a specific brand to Hasbro around 92 to 93. They were called Big Hair Dudes with Bad Attitudes.
I mean, very obviously like Ninja Turtles-ish.
Yeah. And they were like in opposition to how you would think the trolls would be. Whimsical, I guess.
These were the badass trolls. You're right. There were several variations, even within the action figure market for trolls.
Yeah.
But this was the line that was like, you motherfuckers better watch out. This is a different kind of troll.
And the sculpts on these were really well done, and everything that went into them to sort of replicate pop culture characters, like they kind of aped pop culture characters, right?
Right. I think there was, aside from this one, there was like a T-1000.
They did characters like that, like sort of like a Superman, Terminator, a wrestler.
I usually hate parodies, but for some reason with Battle Trolls,
And these were great because the artwork on the packaging, just awesome. The commercial was fantastic. Just everything is there. And you're like, man, this is great. So this Franken-troll, he had this kind of lavender-looking skin and this bright green hair. And he just looked wild. I thought he was just so cool-looking.
So I obviously always remembered Battle Trolls, but I think Father Time had sweetened my memories. I forgot how pissed off they look.
Yeah.
So I went and looked up pictures of this guy today, like, I mean, he looks like the thing from Trilogy of Terror. It's a really mean-looking Frank.
He sort of reminds me of Hoggle from Labyrinth meets a Boglin or something. He just looks so cool.
Well, since I still have the tab open for Jaws from James Bond, let me look up this Hoggle character. Hoggle from Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Now, what you gonna do is get out of here. And it so happens that I know a shortcut out of the whole...
Oh, yeah. You make Hoggle purple. You got him.
I mean, this is just a cool-looking troll. And I think if you're going to buy a troll of any type, you're going to go with Franken-troll.
I won't say that he's my absolute favorite, but he is at least in the top 3 of my favorites from Battle Trolls. But that's only because it really is a beautiful line. There's some stiff competition.
There is.
I feel like the troll craze of the late 80s and early 90s gets a little undersold nowadays because it was huge.
It kind of just went to the moon and then immediately plummeted. And then stuff like Battle Trolls wasn't like primo on the shelves. It was kind of like a little bit pushed to the side.
Oh, yeah. This was definitely like a 3 for $10 at KB. It was shelved next to the Aliens figures.
Yeah. Or you mentioned last time, Kitty City.
Oh, Lionel Kitty City. That's where dreams come true. And you find Masters of the Universe vehicles in the mid-90s.
Oh, my God.
That place ruled.
The best. Amazing.
By the way, I don't know if you saw the back of the package, but it did have a little biography of Franken-troll.
It did, and I was going to mention these biographies to you because I think they're interesting.
Franken-troll is the horrible handiwork of a troll scientist, a gruesome assortment of spare body parts assembled in an ill-fated attempt to create the ultimate troll.
Yes. Kind of like doing like a G.I. Joe thing.
Yeah, which... is so cool because, like, oh my God, there is a dog right now. Like, just freaking, this dog is going crazy. You gotta hear this. There's no way you don't. Right? You hear that.
I can't hear it now.
It's fucking dogs, man. Anyway, yeah, Battle Trolls, Franken Troll, a wonderful action figure.
Yes, the best.
Number 5.
Released in 1983 for the Atari 2600, Frankenstein's Monster.
Yeah.
The video game, Jay.
Nice.
I'm sure this wasn't a big childhood favorite, but what did you think when you dived into this one?
I was awakened to the game. Yeah, I didn't have it as a kid, and I never played it. I knew that there was a game, but I never watched anyone play it or anything, so...
You were never, you know, notorious for watching Atari Let's Plays, so not terribly surprised. But you have to admit, by Atari standards, it looks pretty cool.
It looked awesome, yeah.
Silver box.
The box and the artwork is amazing.
So you have to remember, this is like Atari era, so the graphics are nothing. They basically have to convey these ideas about the games through this promotional art, which was always awesome. But here it's about Frankenstein, so it's doubly awesome.
Yeah, the artwork looked like Neil Gaiman's Frankenstein.
It completely looks like that. This blue-skinned, long-haired demon with red eyes. Awesome.
So good.
Which looks nothing like Frankenstein in the game.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So you've seen this played now, and you might have actually tried it yourself, right?
Yeah, I did.
To me, it's very hard to play, but I was using a laptop keyboard, so... Short of the joystick, it's a little easier.
Honestly, it seemed pretty complicated to me, but as I read a lot of feedback, this is known as one of the best games.
Right, it's very well regarded, and I'm glad I read that too, because now I know to be respectful.
Nobody gets like high praise in that arena.
Kind of surprising that this is one of the more well-received games.
The really jarring sound effects... It's just so shrill.
Where that might be annoying on a different game, like you're saying, it actually works here because it is scary.
It is, and that's the thing that a lot of people don't remember. If you played Atari as a kid, I remember playing late at night, and I'd have to put the volume even a little bit lower, but like when something was loud or there was an explosion or something... Man, that was scary.
Sometimes you would have sound effects in there that would just like screech at you.
This sounds like Disaster Piece. It follows music.
If you strung the beat and tightened it up, you're right. You would definitely get that vibe.
Yeah.
Schematically, the game, it kind of resembles Donkey Kong, right? You got like that three-floored screen.
It's very similar to that. You're right.
And the goal is to carry bricks from the ground level up to Frankenstein. I guess they want you to build a barrier around him.
You have to save the villagers because if Frankenstein gets loose, then he'll kill all the villagers. That's what they think.
Is that you adding some color or is that like in the manual?
No, I mean, it's there. It's definitely there. Oh,
that's the subtext is what you're saying.
Yeah, you have to barricade Frankenstein in. You didn't get the pamphlet?
I did, but like I always have with video game pamphlets, I went straight to the page with the enemies.
Oh my God. So there's ghosts, there's bats, right? This yep. is very upper alley.
Uh-huh. They also had spiders. And
spiders.
And giant tarantulas. They actually differentiate. They have both spiders and giant tarantulas. So this is what you're contending with as you're dragging bricks to and fro. I can't say that I was incentivized enough by this plot to try to like get really good at the game, but it's fun to watch somebody else play it.
It was Sears Telegames. It wasn't even like straight up Atari or anything.
Sears Telegames. Now that takes me back.
To your phase in life where you were heavily into Sears Telegames. Oh, man,
throughout preschool, you just couldn't shut me up about Sears. What are they called? Telegames. So, did you see what happens when you lose the game?
Frankenstein gets loose and he comes at you, like, toward the screen, and he's jumping almost out of the screen.
He's, like, actually getting bigger, so they're increasing the size of the pixels, but they very rarely did that, as far as I remember, in Atari games. That was a pretty cool effect.
That was like a video game version of breaking the fourth wall.
Frankenstein and the Atari will run you about $60 to $75 for a loose worn cartridge or several $100 for a box copy, Jay.
Yeah. I mean,
You're okay with just seeing it. You don't need to own it.
Yeah, exactly.
I know what that was code for.
fun is back. Oh, yes, siree. It's the 2600 from Atari. It's the video system with classics galore, from Space Invaders to Cars That Roar. A real hip joystick controls the screen. Solaris is hot and Midnight Magic's mean. And one more thing, it's got a special low price, under 50 bucks.
50 bucks?
Now, isn't that nice? Ooh, the fun is back. Oh, yes, siree. It's the 2600 from Atari.
Number 666.
When a couple of med students decide to make a new friend,
prepare to make history!
The operation is a monstrous success.
Frankenstein!
Now, Frank's going back to school.
Hi, Frank.
And he's the biggest man on campus.
I want to date Conan.
The original party animal's back. In a terrifyingly funny world premiere movie. And now, Fox presents Frankenstein, The College Years.
Taking you back to 1991, Matt, Frankenstein, The College Years, which was a TV movie made for Fox.
I went into this believing that it was going to be painful, but my God, best thing I've ever seen.
In this case, it was literally made for TV, so you didn't get those that often, and when they happened, you seemed in on something.
Made for television movies back then, they usually didn't get shipped to cable, so basically you only saw it on network repeats, which were rare.
Right.
So you felt like you had to tune in, or it was gone forever.
I would always tape these made for TV movies, and this is one that I did, and I would watch it all the time. How it relates to Frankenstein, you think, well, maybe this is going to be loosely based. No, you know what? This is a pretty by-the-numbers storytelling, but for 1991.
You first. You talk to it. Say what? I don't know. I don't speak monster.
Me, Mark. Me, friend. Him, monster. Not Tarzan.
If you think you can do better.
Don't look at me. He's your patient.
Or, you know, if you want to, you know, be alone, that's...
We'll wait outside.
Yeah, we'll just give a little space.
You have Frankenstein getting recreated because they found his body on a college campus. There was a professor doing studies, and he was going to bring back Frankenstein.
It's hard for me to see it as classic, but sure.
No, but I'm saying it's 1991, you know, it's the 91 version of Frankenstein. They bring him back. He winds up being a football player. He's this big dude. He becomes popular, dressing like a cool guy.
Full scholarship, tuition, room and board. We'll even see if we can score your car. Okay?
Score!
That's the ticket. Just sign.
It's basically Encino Man, but like Frankenstein.
Right. And I think there's a lot of comparisons to that movie, but this actually predated Encino Man. And it starred William Ragsdale from Herman's Head, which was a great show, also on Fox.
I believe it was on television at that point, right? Or it was about to be, at least.
Yeah.
I loved Herman's Head. I was a Ragsdale fan.
Yeah, me too. Big fan. And I just think that this felt like an important movie at the time. Even though it wasn't like scary, it was still considered a horror comedy, which I just love that kind of vibe.
No, no, Frank, don't eat that. That'll give you sense. Here, eat the salad. It's very good for you. No, Frank, don't eat the pudding. I'm telling you. Okay, eat the pudding. Fine.
The Frankenstein is just great. The acting is so quirky and fun.
And it doesn't seem dated to a point where you're like grumbling. This actually held up pretty well, I would think.
Well, it's funny because I think the first like 15 minutes, if I'm being honest, they're a little bit painful. It's so spoofy. It's way, way over the top.
Yeah.
But once it like settles in and they add the actual Frankenstein character, it becomes pretty cool.
Lynn Tanner from ALF is in this movie.
I was waiting for it. I was waiting for the reference. You didn't disappoint. The sister from ALF.
Yes.
Why is he eating the shelf?
Actually, that's where all the nutrition is.
When you have movies like this from the era, like I was saying, so this is 1991, this was very accurate to the times. I think sometimes you'll see a movie from that same era, and it feels more contrived.
I appreciate the thought. I think that's, for me, maybe slightly overstating the case. I mean, they have a whole freaking montage set to pop music where they put Frankenstein in different outfits. Somewhere up in the dead of night, hiding in the
dark, waiting to come out when the moon is full. That's my favorite scene, the whole fashion show scene with monster rock playing. By the way, I'm calling that for the next time we pick spooky songs.
Oh, man. Damn it. You can't pick. It's only April. Spooky songs picking season doesn't begin until July. So from what I can see, this film, like we were saying earlier, never got any kind of official release.
But it's available on YouTube.
Yeah, and it's a total early 90s recording, 4x3, and just like so much grain.
And it has different names in different places. There's another alternate name, Mi Amigo Frank, Party Time Mit Frankenstein. Which I love because
I was waiting to see if it was there one that was even better than Party Time Mid Frankenstein.
Yeah,
no way.
It's just an underrated movie.
It is. I looked up the actor. I forgot to write his name down. Who played Frankenstein? He's been in some stuff, but doesn't seem like he's been in a whole lot. And I was surprised because they almost get like a Christopher Lloyd vibe from him in this film.
Yeah, very much like that. You're right.
Let's be real. This is such a dopey movie, but he sells it so well.
He does.
You just like I like this anyway.
Yeah, it's fun. And
the cow says,
"Moo." Hey, try the chicken. That's my favorite one.
Number 7. Deep within the extinct volcano that is Autobot headquarters, a strange experiment is taking place. But this experiment is not the brainchild of Autobot scientist Wheeljack, but of their human friend, Sparkplug.
My final pick is going to seem almost too far outside the box, but I actually think this is on target, Jay. September of 1985, the first episode of the second season of the Transformers cartoon was called Autobot Spike.
Transformers.
It included what was essentially the Transformers version of Frankenstein's monster, and Frankenstein's referenced several times in it. It's not like this is a reach.
Yeah, I mean, within the first like 2 to 3 minutes, they mention Frankenstein twice.
They're doing Frankenstein, the Transformers version, which is awesome. So at the start of the episode, you have Sparkplug, who is one of the Autobots' human friends. He's built a new Autobot using spare parts that they found around their headquarters.
Hey, look, Dad did it! Autobot X is alive!
You see, Wheeljack? You're not the only mad scientist around here.
Which is just weird, Jay. Isn't that just weird? Like, wouldn't those be dead bodies?
Hey, look, we want to make something out of stuff that's otherwise going to go in the garbage. I think that's fun. Like when you were a kid, maybe you found some electronic crap and kind of put it together to make one giant robot thing. I used to do that all the time.
I'm not disagreeing with that part. I'm just saying that it is basically the same thing as us keeping dead bodies in our houses in pieces in case we just need parts of them for something.
It's not like that at all.
Wow, it's like some kind of robot Frankenstein monster.
Franken what, Spike?
Oh, it'd take too long to explain, Bumblebee.
Anyway, they call this mismatched Autobot Autobot X. His head, his torso, his arms, his legs are all from different robots, so he's got like a mismatched color scheme. I love the design.
This is very much a you pick.
It's not a you pick?
I just have a thing to say, all right, about Transformers in general. I feel like it was too intellectual for me at times when I was a kid, and a lot of the stuff was very adult-oriented. This was great, though. This was really cool. And I just felt bad, I guess, for Autobot X.
Let's get into what happens in this episode. So first they bring Autobot X to life, and he's just like, basically acting like Frankenstein's monster. So they shoot him dead. So Autobot X is now dormant once more. The experiment failed and everyone was ready to move on.
Hey, it's not supposed to do that.
Wow, Dad, you kind of created a metal Frankenstein's monster.
Prime, I guess Autobot X better be put in storage, at least until I get it perfected.
All would have ended there if not for this next incident. Later in the episode, during a routine battle with the Decepticons, Spike, who is another one of the human friends, Sparkplug's son, Jay.
Yes.
He gets in a bad car accident, and he's in Bumblebee, but I guess that still is a car accident. So, did you catch what happens after that?
They, like, switch his soul into Frankenstein or something, like, I guess.
They bring Spike to the hospital, and it is deduced there, with doctor approval, implicit doctor approval, that the best way to handle this whole situation is by moving Spike's mind into Autobot X so they can safely perform surgery.
If only there were a way of separating Spike's mind from his body while we work.
Doctor, maybe there is a way. It's a one in a billion chance, but if it'll save my boy, we gotta take it.
See, I said it's way too intellectual for a five-year-old.
I don't think they actually used the word surgery, but what the hell else could be going on? I'm like, okay, this is like, I mean, this is the season two opener. That's wild.
Bold.
Bold, bold, bold. So Spike is now inside Autobot X, and he just can't resist the urge to destroy things, Jay.
Dad, I'm Spike. Spike? Me? No! No!
Spike! Son! What have we done to you?
And Frankenstein is actually playing on one of their little closed-circuit TVs at the headquarters.
Well, that was the straw that ended up breaking Spike's back.
You see, Doctor, you've created a monster! A monster!
No!
They're treating me like a damn Frankenstein over here.
This is a really fun and weird episode. It's basically the Transformers doing a horror movie.
Yeah, it wasn't like scary or anything, but yeah, definitely. I mean, it's as close as we're going to get. I didn't really remember it. I'm sure I probably seen it.
Transformers was not one of your main ones, I don't think.
You know, like, it was weird because at the time I had them. I had the lunchbox. I was really into it. I guess it just didn't stick with me as much.
But I could see you doing the lunchbox just purely for fashion reasons because it was a hit show. Back at home, no one could see what you were watching.
Oh, I would never. I would never carry a box that wasn't my favorite show.
The gem lunchbox.
Yeah.
Should I use my new size, my power to help the world like Optimus Prime does? No! Why should I? I'm not like Prime. I'm a monster!
The weirdest thing about this, it wasn't even advertising any of the toys. They didn't make an Autobot Spike action figure. So they did this completely wild episode just for the hell of it, and you gotta respect that.
Oh, wow. I'm back. Back where I belong.
You know, Wheeljack, I could probably repair that mess, but I think it best that I don't.
I wonder what it'd be like for a robot mind to be transferred to a human.
Number 8.
Welcome to Dr. Frankenstein's disco party.
Dr. Frankenstein's disco party. Dr. Frankenstein's disco party. Dr. Frankenstein's disco party.
invitations are delivered by a bat. In Transylvania, they do it like that. All the monsters, they make their flight, come flapping at the windows in the middle of the night.
Dr. Frankenstein disco party.
All right, Matt, get your bell bottoms on. We're about to go to the disco. Dr. Frankenstein's Disco Party, 1977. Johnny Wakelin.
I can't believe you're not saving this for the Spooky Song Show, but it is perfection.
It is absolute perfection. This guy, Johnny, he got a little famous in 1974 for a song he wrote about Muhammad Ali.
Basically, he was known as the Muhammad Ali song guy.
Yeah, but I am single-handedly going to be credited with the resurgence of his career right now because this is the best song ever.
It is absolutely in that conversation. This is so far beyond great that I don't even know an adjective to describe it, Jay.
And at first, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get all the crap about it not being Halloween-y or scary enough. But all the lyrics are in check. It's all about bats and monsters that love to boogie. I mean, I love to boogie.
You're a notorious boogier.
And I love the Frankenstein monster. So here we go.
You know what? You do love the Frankenstein monster. When we go to Spirit Halloween or any place, really, if there's a new Frankenstein item, you buy it, irrespective of cost or difficulty in transporting it home.
But it's just easy to remember the lyrics to this one, too. Just say the title 25 times.
So there is that. It has that, like, disco element where it's a very, very repeated chorus situation. But there are also a lot of good verses. I'm like, wow, he packed a lot of fucking shit in this song.
Oh, yeah. It could really fit right in there. Whether it's a Halloween playlist or if you just really want to have like an everyday average disco night a la Lewis Tully at your apartment.
What a reference. If only you made it before the eclipse because he was also in that movie.
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, it's worth stopping everything right now and listening to this.
I mean, let's be real. It's actually going to get to the point of annoying you because there is going to be an intense spike after the show in interest in the Johnny Wakelin Frankenstein song.
Of course there is.
And you are absolutely going to be responsible for it, but you're never going to get the credit you deserve. Just to like further prove that, I looked up the vinyl on eBay, and it looks like pretty much every copy, it comes from Spain or France or even Turkey. There's none here. So I don't think this song was ever really anything in the States.
Yeah, it was like probably a really low run, if anything.
The guy, Wakelin, he's English or something.
And I did say before how he got a little famous. There's actually a line in his Wikipedia page that actually says he got a little famous in 1974. Oh, like, not God. Even in quotes. Like, they're just, somebody wrote it and said he got a little famous, I guess.
That's such a weird, immeasurable way to describe it. I'm surprised it passed muster. They're usually much more buttoned up over there, Jay. That's such a, man, that needs to be fixed. By the way, you were sending me some comparisons earlier.
Yeah.
I got one for you with this Johnny Wakelin guy. He's a cross between Rob Reiner from All in the Family and Schneider from One Day at a Time.
That's good.
I mean, I thought it was at least a 7. Unlike this song, which is a perfect 10, Jay.
Dr. Frankenstein disco party.
Bump, bump, bump.
Disco is the word that brings them from their lairs. They all love to boogie down on Frankie's stairs. Their tete-a-tete gets a little diabolic. But what can you expect from a bunch of plotaholic? They're Dracula, a Bigfoot, the mummies and men. Frankenstein's monster, the zombies and friends. Vampire spooks, freaks of all kinds, flock to the castle and have a good time.
I love these monster parties, don't you?
So Matt, that was our Frankenstein show.
One thing I am proud of, I don't know, again, if we brought up Big Frank, I suppose it's possible, but everything else, I think, way out of left field and yet perfectly on target for the show.
Yeah, there's just so much. And what's great about a character like this is that this guy's been around for so long and he still seems like cool and interesting.
What I'm really coming to appreciate about Frankenstein's monster is that he's a very versatile character in his way. If you want him to be in a comedy, you can. If you want him to be in a straight-up horror movie, you can. If you want him to be a 17-inch action figure with tools in its head, you can. Anything goes.
So he was a blow-up toy, a transformer, a kid's doll, essentially, a kaiju monster, a toy troll, a disco song, a college student, a video game. I mean, it's crazy. So what are we going to do here?
All right, I'll go through yours.
Okay.
I have to be honest, when you send me your list at first, I'm like, looking at it, I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then as I inspected each one, I'm like, oh my God. The thought that any of them would not have been on this show sickened me. Every one of these rules.
Yeah.
So you brought up Johnny Weakland's Dr. Frankenstein's Disco Party. You brought up the Diet Coke commercial where the two young people go on a date, an anniversary date, with an inflatable Frankenstein. You brought up the Frankentroll from the Battle Trolls toy line of the early 90s.
Yeah.
He actually looks a lot like Thanos. And finally, Frankenstein the College Years.
Yes.
Made for television movie, 1991. William Ragsdale, Greg from the Brady Bunch, and the older sister from Alf. Greatest movie of all time.
Yes. What do you think?
With apologies to Johnny Weakland, I can't not pick Frankenstein the College Years.
Oh, damn.
A movie like this, it needs shepherds like you and now me. I am part of your cult. And the reason is because you're not going to go out of your way to watch this. And even if you do, those first 10 brutal minutes are going to put you so far off to watching the rest of it. You guys got to do it.
Bro.
Get me that boy.
Let me go through your picks, Matt. Tremendous list as well. We had the Play School Big Frank from 1992 with all the cogs and wheels and fix me,
fix me.
And then the Transformers Autobot X from September 85 and Frankenstein's Monster for Atari 2600.
Poor Atari Frank has no chance at all.
And Frankenstein Conquers the World from Toho 1965. You're welcome for giving it to you. God.
It's such a borderline giving. I'll probably lose, but I'll go to court over it.
All right. I think it's between Big Frank and
Kaiju Stein.
Yeah. And I'm going Big Frank.
Wow.
Fix me. His name's Big Frank.
Fix me.
That, I think, is a bit of a surprise.
Here's the thing with Big Frank. I was a little bit older. I remember one of my friends, his younger brother had this. Out of the side of my eye, I'm like, damn, that thing's so cool.
Someday, baby.
Someday, Frankie. So when you do all the bells and whistles inside his chest and all that and take the tools out of his head, that just seemed like a fun toy. And that's what you got to have. You have to have some sort of function.
It just satisfied everything you wanted out of every possible kind of toy.
It was a sensory overload.
Yeah, it was. Oh my God. I'd never been more in touch with myself than I was when doing tools on Big Frank.
Doing tools,
as the carpenters say.
Did you know that there's one thing that he says that sounds completely different than the other voices? I think he says, thank you. It's like, wait, that's not the same voice.
I did notice that compared to the Big Frank in the commercial, the actual Big Frank is much better spoken, which is weird.
Oh, man. So that was a hell of a list of Frankensteins.
Yeah. So our winners tonight are Big Frank and Frankenstein, the college student.
Yes, the college years. Mi amigo.
Mi amigo.
Yeah. So we want to remind you guys we are on Patreon.
That is patreon.com/purplestuff.
where we have our monthly bonus shows.
Every month, a new one drops. Even when we're late on the main show, we're never late on there. So, yeah, check us out.
Thank you guys so much for listening. This has been the Purple Stuff Podcast. I am Jay from Sludge Central.
I am Matt from Dinosaur Dracula.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Purple Stuff Podcast.